And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this. Holy cow, they actually did it. They're undefeated going into November, the number 13 Golden Gopher football team in the entire country. Here we are tonight. So a lot to get into, a lot of things that we got to talk about this 8-0 Minnesota team. They've won 10 straight. They've won their first eight games for the first time since 1941. But before we do that, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yes, once again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring this entire 2019 season. You can go to their website, goallineclub.org, to participate, to become a member, to join events like the game previews that they run at Jack's Cafe. I was able to go this Friday, and holy cats, you guys, if you're not there, you're seriously missing out. It is a wonderful event. The food is pretty solid at Jack's Cafe. They filled out the entire, there were 150 or 175 people there. They almost filled the entire upper room. There is going to be limited space available. Pretty elite breakdown. And I use the word elite very, very sparingly, but the very elite breakdown by Rod Chance on the D-backs. He previewed a ton of stuff that actually you saw in this game against Maryland. So very fascinating stuff if you want to check that out. To save $5, use Beld or Bell 5. I got to look this up. I will get it in the next ad read. But I think it is Beld 5 to save $5 on the next preview, which will be against Penn State.
It certainly will be. And that we'll get into that to end the podcast tonight. But before we do that, we got another dominant Gopher football victory to talk about. And joining us, as always, here in Big Ten play is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you, and what is it like for you as a former player to see your alma mater performing so well on the field right now?
I'm doing well, guys. I appreciate you having me back. And like anybody else, I'm excited. So as a former player, I'm obviously follow the team, and I enjoy being a fan now, and love to see this kind of success. And it's been fun to see them succeed, but just what we've talked about from week by week, and even going back to last year, the growth and to see these guys get better and improve is gratifying. It's fun to see, and look forward to one way or another. It's going to be a wild November, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, before we get into this game, Luke, I do want to say that I know people really enjoyed Luke pushing my buttons in the preview episode, and I can already hear Luke kind of snickering.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm sure you don't.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But I know that I phrased this question to both of you guys in the pre-production meeting, but the October that Minnesota just had is something that we kind of need to reflect on, I think, a little bit. Because when I looked up the stats for this, it was wild, where Minnesota outscored their four Big Ten opponents in October by 127 points. That's an average victory of essentially 32 points per game against four Big Ten teams. Now, you can say what you will about the quality of the Big Ten teams. Do you know how hard it is, unless your name is Ohio State right now, to win four conference games by 127 points in an offense that now has put up 28 plus points in eight straight games, which is the first time in 115 bleeping years Minnesota has started the season by putting up 28 or more points. It was the year of our Lord, 1904. I don't believe there was much going on in America at that time. Minnesota was playing against high school teams. That's where things were at. And the defense, outside of garbage time, has allowed 6 points in the month of October. 6 points if you take out garbage time, where Minnesota's second-team defense is on the field. Now, I want to phrase this question to Derek before it gets back to Luke. I wrote about this on Gopher Illustrated, of which, by the way, here's my only plug for tonight. It's 3 months for $9.95 right now. It's 11 cents per day. There have been a ton of new members joining. I know that there is thousands upon thousands of you guys listening to this on any given week. They're 8-0. They have a two-game lead in the Big Ten West, and it's a bye week, which means Flex going on the road recruiting. if I have piqued your interest at all throughout this podcast about potentially joining GI, I don't know what else I have to do to lead you to water to make you drink here. But an 8-0 football team with a big, big November ahead of them, Gopher Illustrated should be the place for you. But Eric, this is the most dominant month of Gopher football statistically in a long time. But for you, I mean, what do you think in terms of this is the most dominant month of Gopher football since?
Boy, it's, you know, I can't answer that because, you know, I think back to different stretches the Gophers have done well through the years, but there's, you know, usually been, because it's college football, there's usually been, you know, a game that's not perfect or, you know, something that maybe they didn't win as, you know, as much as they should have, or they had a let, you know, they had two or three good games and then they had a letdown, which is not uncommon. And this is, you know, this stretch that you're referencing is unique in that it's difficult. And usually you see something like this happening from a very senior laden or very upperclassman type team. And so it's even, in my opinion, more rare to see it from a team filled with a lot of underclassmen. That makes it, you know, extra unique, I guess you could say. And it's just, it's the odds of it happening. And like you said, it doesn't matter who the opponent is. Just having the odds of not having a letdown or having one of those, yeah, but like we talked about early in the year, they were winning games, but we said, well, this has to improve, or, you know, this part of the game, or yeah, they let them back in the game at the end. There's just been, I mean, these last few games, they continue to improve in each game. And that's like the ultimate cliche that coaches say. But I think we have a case here where I think the reality and the facts bear that out, that they just continue to improve. And we're running out of things to come back and say, well, they can, you know, here's something that didn't go well, or they can, you know, there are still things they can improve on. And yes, the competition gets better, but the way that they're handling the games as of late is—it's getting better and better, and it's—I'll just keep saying it one more time—it's unique.
Yeah, I guess
Luke, what do you think?
You know, I'm not going to answer your question because basically, in my lifetime, I don't know that there's been a dominant period like this. I'm not a terribly old individual; I'm only 32. But you know, I think that, you know, to Derek's point, in stretches, you know, maybe 2004. Was kind of the peak for me as a fan. And, you know, the big letdown was that Michigan game, right, where they had a huge lead and lost it. But, you know, this dominant stretch, and especially in October, it's unprecedented. I don't particularly care. I mean, I know I was very sarcastic about the whole real team thing, but in all honesty, like, I don't understand people being negative about the fact that they're winning games. In addition to that, like, it's not easy to predict who's going to be good and who's going to be bad any given year, right? Nobody picked Minnesota to be 8-0, right? But alternatively, Maryland was ranked at one point, and probably justifiably so. So all those AP sports writers, or I don't know if they're not all AP writers, all those college football writers that, you know, vote on the AP poll, like, hello, they make mistakes too. And this is a solid team in the Gophers, no matter what happens in November, right? But I've gone back to this numerous times now. In every season I asked Derek about, you know, if you're going to be relevant in the Big Ten, you have to be playing your best football going into and through November. And to date, I cannot think of a time the Gophers have been playing better football going into November. They have a really tough slate, but if they can build some momentum, they could be legitimate contenders. I'm not saying I don't think that they'll be college playoff contenders, but like I'm saying, like they're legit.
Yeah, it's really tough to argue because, like you said, what was the ideal scenario for this season? You are 7-1, 8-0 going into November, hopefully playing your best football. Well,
I had them 8-4 going. I had them 8-4 in our preview episode. You had them 9-3.
9-3. And I mean, we're about as optimistic as most people are, but I like to think we're pretty grounded and objective about the takes. But even still, I think that, you know, we can revisit this at the end of this podcast, but for everyone saying, well, they still haven't played anybody. Okay, well, we're going to find out in November, but they also just played four Big Ten teams, and they won by 32 points per game. That is dominance. That is what a good football team does. A good football team doesn't pull the old Minnesotan cliche and go, oh, just going to sneak past you here. No, a good football team beats bad football teams and average football teams, and they do it really, really good. And that's what we saw again on Saturday when those dominant Maryland Terrapins came to town. And the last thing I want to say is I think it was Gopher Illustrated member Fence Jumpers is the one who I think tweeted this to me this morning, where we've talked about on this podcast the revenge tour. I coined the phrase going into October. The revenge tour was Illinois, Nebraska, and Maryland. Those three teams dismantled Minnesota last year. Well, Minnesota dismantled them in 19. And in 2018, against Illinois, Nebraska, and Maryland, Minnesota was minus 78. This year, in 2019, they were plus 78. Plus 78. So that's a 156-point swing. And just what a year, just what a difference a year makes. And let's get into this Maryland game, because we got a lot to talk about a team that just showed up from the opening whistle, Luke.
I mean, you know, what a difference a year makes, and what a difference a Rob Smith makes. That I thought I had to get in there, but sorry.
There it is.
That was cruel. He did his best. Okay, so let's start probably with the defense. You mentioned it. I have to eat crow here. I was not high on the Rossi hire, for one, right? And I said, prove it to me, and I guess you proved it to me.
Certainly.
In Big Ten play, right, they gave up 30-some points to Purdue. But you mentioned, what is it, the last three games, other than garbage time, they've only given up 6 points. This defense has been legit, guys, and they were, again, legit against Maryland. So, Derek, just starting with you, you know, what did you see out of the Gopher defense? You know, this is a Maryland offense that they have struggled with mightily, and it's largely unchanged in terms of scheme, but they've struggled mightily in years past. What did you see that they were able to do to take away this explosive Maryland offense?
Well, as they've done the last few games, the Gophers have played with a, you know, stop the run first scheme. They did use a plus one in the box for, you know, a lot of the game, knowing that, you know, the threat Maryland had. I believe that, you know, it was their belief that they wanted to stop them from, you know, explosive gains in the run game first, and not give up anything deep passing. And so, what they did was, I just think that if there's one thing I can say that I believe Joe Rossi's done that's been different and has had good success with, is they continue to be unpredictable with their schemes on defense. They disguise coverage as well. They're not predictable in certain situations, parts of the field. That's what you look at as an offensive coordinator, is to try and determine, okay, when someone gets in the red zone against this team, or when someone gets across the 50-yard line, they tend to bring these type of blitzes in these situations. And I just think they continue to be unpredictable. I mean, early in the game, they're running a half zone, half man scheme where they have man coverage to the field, which allows them another defender against the run. If they see run first to the field, they're running zone to the boundary. And later in the game, they're running zone to the field, and they run man to the boundary, and Coney Durr comes down in a crossing route, and I believe the quarterback thought it was zone. He tries to throw the shallow cross that's tipped, but Coney Durr picks it and takes it back to the house. So from a scheme standpoint, they just continue to be unpredictable with their calls and continue shuffling things up, which I think is giving them problems. And then continuing with the theme we started off with, I think player by player, they just continue to improve. The defensive line, I think, in the run defense continues to improve. Their four-man rush continues to improve, and the pass defense. And then the last thing I would say is as they started, I believe, in the Illinois game, and it's carried through till now, they continue to put great faith in their outside cornerbacks using island coverage. And this allows them to do a lot of different things, not only to defend the run inside, but some of the things they're able to do with Antoine Winfield is a safety in the middle of the field. He's all over the place. He's coming up and run support and rundowns. He's able to fly around the field in passing downs, intercept passes. And the reason he's able to do that is he's not in man coverage. They've got those guys in island man coverage on the outside, which allows him to roam, and he can just cover the entire field. So those are just a few of the things I noticed on Saturday. And, you know, it's between scheme and improve, you know, the execution, they just continue to improve each week.
I think the biggest thing for me from watching that Maryland game back today was the defensive line as a collective unit just continues to play so well each week, and they're improving. And we can talk about Carter Coughlin, of which I believe I had him at six different pressures on Saturday. I think that would be, for me anyway, for just going through my memory here, a new season high for Carter. And again, you look at the box score stats for him, they don't look impressive. Two tackles, one tackle for loss. But he was everywhere. And I tried to highlight it in my GIF rewind where I believe it was on the Anthony McFarland 2-yard run. Now you're thinking to yourself, Ryan, why are you talking to me about a 2-yard run? Well, it's because Carter Coughlin against the run right now is playing the run as well as he's ever had. For a 240-pound kid, he takes on a double team, sets the edge, and it forces McFarland to go all the way back across the field where Chris Williamson mirrors him, is able to bring him down for a tackle for loss. Or you have Sam Renner or Keontae Shad, Minnesota's three techniques there. They continue to play so well with that single-man coverage there. They're winning their individual battles, and that's helping out Coughlin and the rest of these guys. I mean, even with Braylon Oliver, of which I want to ask you about, Derek, in terms of the Kamal Martin replacements, why does Braylon Oliver get through unscathed? Well, it's because Carter Coughlin takes up the double team. He cuts across the left guard's face. The left guard goes with him. Oliver loops around, and he's untouched to get Minnesota's first sack of the game, and the Gophers get off the field. It's this entire unit up front right now that a year after Maryland rushes for 300-plus yards on them, what does Maryland do on Saturday? 79 rushing yards and 23 attempts. They continue to do the two things Joe Rossi wants to do well each and every week, that is stop the run and limit big plays. Outside of the long touchdown and garbage time, Maryland couldn't do anything. Now, Maryland also rotated three quarterbacks. Their receivers had pass-catching issues, sure, but that's what you do to a bad team is you take advantage of their mistakes. Now, Derek, to me, on tape and watching it live, Kamal Martin, Plex said all week he was a game-time decision. If you listen to this podcast, if you read on Gopher Illustrated, you knew I was highly, highly suspicious. I did not believe that Kamal Martin was going to play. So from what I noticed on tape, Derek, Mariano Sorry-Marin was in there essentially on most downs, outside of a couple passing down situations where they brought out their passing down package. But on early downs, on those running downs, Mariano was out there, and he ends up leading the team in tackles. And I thought, for the most part, he played pretty well. He wasn't asked to do, I think, as much as what Kamal does, but he was asked to do. I mean, you're still stopping Anthony McFarland and Javon Leak, are two very talented running backs from Maryland. I thought he played well. You saw Braylon Oliver get a little bit more time outside of the passing down package. And then on that passing down package, you saw Josh Ani take Kamal Martin's spot there. So I thought for the most part, things continued to flow pretty smoothly. I mean, you'd hope so when Maryland, I believe, had the ball for 4 minutes in the second half. Yes, I believe you read that correctly. 4 minutes of possession in that second half. I'll look at it while Derek's talking. But to me, Sorry-Marin and Oliver were the two big beneficiaries of Kamal being out. And to me, Derek, I thought they played pretty well. What did you think? And did you see Joe Rossi do anything different schematically?
Well, I think what they did, I guess my opinion is they kept Braylon Oliver in situations where things were simplified for him. They had him on some blitzes. They had him on some delays, where it was a little bit more simplified with him in some of the passing situations. And I think the reason for that is Braylon is still at a point early in his career where he's still working on the part of his game of reading and diagnosing plays. I've talked about it before as a defender, you know, the progression that you go through and when you mature as a defender, the first part of that is the mental aspect of understanding your assignment, reading and diagnosing plays. The second part of that is the execution part, you know, how you defend those plays. And then the third part is the effort. And you're not able to – Braylon has the athleticism and the physical properties, physical tools to be able to do very well in the third part. But he's probably, he's still learning. He's probably not quite there with the first part. And so I think they kept him in situations where he's able to focus. It was assignment, doesn't have to do as much reading and diagnosing. And he really benefited from that because he saw he played fast. He flashed a lot. And I think that's a credit to the coaching staff. As far as Mariano Florimarin, I think he did a very good job. He looked very mentally sharp. He was a guy on running downs, and Maryland is a challenge for linebackers with their offense because Maryland runs power. They run inside zone. They run outside zone. They run a swing pass to the running back, which if you're in man coverage as a linebacker, you have to cover that. They run a screen to the outside, a bubble screen. So there's a lot of different things that you have to be mentally sharp at to defend the run game, and I thought he had a very good game mentally. They did try and pick on him, I think, a few times with the swing pass because, you know, they try and get the linebackers focused inside, and then they swing things outside, and you get to turn and run, and that's a challenge. But I think he, for the most part, he met that challenge. So I think it's I don't want to take anything away from the guys who were on the field executing it, but I think it was a big credit to the coaching staff to have both guys ready.
All right, I think we'd be remiss to not mention that Antoine Winfield seems to have broken his curse with Maryland. He came away from this game thus far, and I know that they're really, really, really tight-lipped on injuries, but he seemed to come away unscathed. So that's a positive. It seems like curse is finally broken, Mr. Burns.
Yeah, for folks who didn't remember coming out of this game, the last 2 years against Maryland, Antoine Winfield, I believe it was in the first quarter of both games, went down with non-contact season-ending injuries. So what does Winfield do in the first quarter of this game? He breaks the curse. He gets a pick, of which Antoine Winfield just knows how to be in the right place at the right time. He's now got 5 interceptions on the season, which is third most in Golden Gopher football history for a single season. And he's just the beneficiary of some deflections, of some bad throws. But I think there's a lot to be said for knowing where to be. For on that route, I believe it was a slant across the middle. Well, if you know where the guy's going to run the slant from, you should set up right behind that throwing window. So if it is deflected like it was, you're there to pick it off. Or when Carter Coughlin gets pressure, if the quarterback misses, here's where he's probably going to miss. That's where I should be. And Winfield broke the curse. Winfield gets a pick in that first quarter. And Winfield, for my money, I think he had one of his best games of the season overall. Yeah, he had the big pick, but he tackled well in the box. And that was something that this defense was horrendous at last year, especially the secondary. The secondary was atrocious at tackling Maryland guys in space last year. This year, the secondary, much, much, much better. And that's a credit to Winfield, a credit to Jordan Howden continues to be one of the most improved players that no one's talking about because Winfield gets all the notoriety with the interceptions, but Howden continues to tackle well game after game after game. And for my money, you can make the case that he's the most improved player outside of potentially Kamal Martin on this defense. And then to Derek's point earlier as well, and Derek, the trust that Joe Rossi has put in Benjamin St. Juste and Coney Durr. And you know, you feel great that Coney's finally able to get his hands on one. He had 7 passes defended coming into this game, which for him is a new career high and a new season high. But for him to finally get one in his hands there and take it to the house, you know, you love to see that for a guy who really had some struggles the last 2 years. But why do you think that Joe Rossi has so much confidence in his corners right now? Now, for me, I'm not the most elite football mind in the world. I like to think I know my stuff a little bit, but it just seems to me that because St. Juste and because Coney Durr and because Keandre Thomas and Phillip Howard and when Terrell Smith eventually gets back, they haven't been beat deep yet. And we're 8 games into the season. So for me, if I'm Joe Rossi and I'm trying to think about his mindset, it's like, well, we're 2/3 of the way through the season. They haven't been beat deep. Let's continue to put more and more on their plate each week until they don't finish their plate or they get beat. But what have you seen? I mean, why do you think that Joe Rossi is so confident in his corners right now?
Well, other than obviously those guys just getting better, and we all talk about all the time, college players just improving with experience, I think a couple things come to mind. The first is anytime your best run to pass defense is a pass rush. So I believe that they feel they can use more island coverage on the outside because they're doing better with their four-man pass rush, and they're running some exchange blitzes and things like that. So they're getting creative when they need to as well. And I think the understanding is it's difficult to throw something like a corner route or a fade route or something that takes, you know, 4 to 5 seconds to develop if you're able to get some pressure. And I would just, you know, go back to one of your earlier points, and I would agree with you. I don't think Maryland blocked on a passing situation. I don't think they blocked Carter Coughlin the entire game. I mean, I don't think they blocked him clean, not one time. He was either pressuring or diving at the guy's feet or tripping somebody up. And so I think that's part of the faith they have on guys on the outside, is knowing that we can lock these guys down for 3 or 4 seconds because the offense is having difficulty extending plays. I think the last thing that contributes is getting the play out of your safeties that they're getting this year. So having Jordan Howden and Antoine Winfield control the middle of the field and having faith that if something is thrown like a deep post, or if a guy runs a seam and you run, you know, a post and a seam on the same side, know that the safety is going to be able to read the quarterback's eyes and be able to come over and help when he needs to. I think that also contributes. So you add all those things up, and again, it allows them to run more island coverage on the outside, which frees everything else up and helps, you know, be able to do things like adding guys in the box and you know, playing things towards the middle of the field.
All right, just to put a bow on defense, I'll just add a couple of things real quick, a couple of stats here. The Gophers held Maryland to 2 for 11 on third down. I just want to note that I think it was at the luncheon, for the Goal Line Club luncheon, Rod Chance said something to the effect of, you know, they want to play strong on first and second down because they believe that they can play with anybody in the country if they can get teams to third and long. And you know what? Quite frankly, holding any team to 2 for 11 is pretty impressive. Also, number two, you frequently hear PJ talk about how important time of possession is, especially in this day and age where teams are playing super, super fast. He still is a firm believer in time of possession. Maryland in the second half alone only had 5 minutes and 30 seconds in time of possession in that second half. That is astounding in terms of ball control for the Gophers. Like, that is absolutely insane.
That's wild.
But okay, just a couple of stats. Pretty impressive for the Gopher defense again. And I will again admit, I was completely wrong on Joe Rossi to date, and I am so happy I was wrong. I couldn't be more excited to announce that I was completely incorrect. But Ryan, you should tell us real quickly about your favorite insurance agent, because I don't think he is rarely ever wrong when it comes to getting a free quote.
I don't think he is. And the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, is essentially keeping the same script as last week, just like the Gopher coaches did, and they're probably going to do on the bye week. So they're going to be out recruiting 3, 4, and maybe even potentially 5-star recruits. Hint, hint, Gopher Illustrated, 3 months for $9.95. But my dad is also out there recruiting new business and personal accounts to move over to the Burns Insurance Agency. As an independent insurance agent, my dad has access to well over 20 of the finest insurance companies out there across the U.S. to choose from. So if you're looking for an agent who ranks you as high as a 5-star recruit and will do anything to protect you or your business, just like the Gopher offensive line has been protecting Tanner Morgan, contact him at insurancebyburns.com.
All right, so let's talk real quickly about the Gopher offense. I have to admit, I did not watch the game live. I was not at the game. I was out helping my father on the farm, and I got to hear the sweet baritone voice of Mike Grimm call the game. And he and Daryl Thompson were just they're really good, for the record. But man, if you thought I was giving Ryan Burns a hard time about the real team talk in the last preview podcast, Mike Grimm was giving Daryl Thompson some serious shade about Rodney Smith breaking his all-time leading all-purpose yards record, which he eclipsed. And I think we'd be remiss not to talk a little bit about Rodney Smith and the career he's had. And, you know, again, this is what I believe his fourth game with 100 yards. He had 103 yards on the day, 6.1 yard average on 17 carries. But this kid, he has been he has been incredible. I think, Ryan, if you and I go back, the very first podcast we recorded, you basically said he was going to be the starting running back as a redshirt freshman, and you had super high hopes for him. You weren't quite ready to say that he was going to be better than David Cobb, but I think at this point we could say he probably was. He might not be the NFL prospect that Cobb was, but... Let's just say having the all-purpose yards record, that's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, be careful to give me credit for any sort of things, because I'll have people remind me about some of the bad takes I've had as well. But yeah, Rodney Smith being really, really good back when I was talking about him in 2015, 2014, yeah, I'd say that was one of my better takes. And his fifth straight 100-yard game in Big Ten play, especially five straight 100-yard games and all five happened to be in Big Ten play, he passes Daryl Thompson all time for the all-purpose record at the University of Minnesota. It's an incredible accomplishment, and I've waxed poetically about him this weekend on Gopher Illustrated, and those are free reads over there. And I think what I come down to is, and Megan Ryan from the Star Tribune also did a fantastic piece about it, a little bit more in depth, that when Rodney went down with that injury last year, things got pretty dark for him. And he even talked about with her his depression. Where is he done playing football? Is this it? Why is it so tough for me to stay healthy? Different things like that. And for what he's been through with injuries, with playing in really bad offenses and really one-dimensional offenses for the first 3 years of his career, and then coming back and rehabbing in the spring and getting ready for the fall and not entirely knowing what the future was going to be for him, because Mo Ibrahim essentially surpassed him in that final stretch with Rodney and Shannon hurt. Ibrahim goes for 1,000 yards. Well, he's back. Shannon's back. Rodney knows this. And all he's done is get better and better each week, and five straight 100-yard games. And I think he's playing some of the best ball of his career. And we asked Kirk Sciarocca about that on Wednesday, and he agreed. He thought that the light really came back on for him in that final non-conference game. And I think you've seen that light really shine brighter and brighter and brighter. And I couldn't be happier for the kid. Now that he's playing in an offense that, number one, he's only seeing maybe plus one in the box from time to time. And if it is plus two, Minnesota's not going to force it. They're just going to pass. So he's seeing even boxes, the plus one boxes. He's got the best multidimensional offense of his career with that passing game. And he's got a moving company up front that is blocking as well as he has seen likely in his career. And I think just with each one of the running backs, for as good as Rodney was on Saturday, Derek, now I didn't pose this to you in the pre-production meeting, so I thought Mo Ibrahim had the best overall game of his career. Now, what I mean by that is statistically, it's really a nondescript day for him. 7 for 37. So he's over 5 yards a carry. But the way he blocked on Saturday, good googly moogly, my man, Derek, because he was able to put some blitzing linebackers in their place, I think 4 or 5 times. He was a big part of the reason why Seth Green and this Wildcat were able to get going. He was blocking like a madman. So what do you think about Rodney Smith? And then with Mo Ibrahim, that's the best I've seen a Gopher running back in pass protection in probably the 9 years I've been following this or covering this team anyway.
Well, I think that real quick on Rodney Smith, I tip of the cap to him, not only to have such a successful long career, but then when you mix in coming back from injuries, I can understand. I mean, as a player, you realize that what you see on Saturdays and the few dozen plays you see, I mean, that's a very small percentage of the work and the time that's put in for these guys. I mean, it's a year-round between spring ball and fall camp and winter workouts and weight training and conditioning and everything. To be able to do that for all those years and then add in coming back from major injuries, I can't imagine both the mental and the physical side of that. So it's a huge tribute to him that he's been able to do that and come back with the success that he's had. So, and then in terms of Mo, yeah, you're correct. I would agree with you, the blocking that he had and also some of the runs he had. I mean, it was what they're doing now with Wildcat is impressive. And many times they're going with the jumbo package, bringing in an extra offensive lineman. They started lining up Brevin Stanford, split out a wide receiver at times, and then motioning him in as another blocker. So you've got an extra offensive lineman, you've got Brevin Stanford, and then you've got Mo Ibrahim blocking, like, you know, a 300-pound offensive tackle. And you see the success they had in the Wildcat on Saturday was a result of all those things. And so I just thought, you know, my comment on the running back group Saturday, I thought it was the hardest they ran all year. Now, it might not, they might not have had the stat. They've had some really good games this year. Maybe Nebraska, perhaps, has better stats. They had some, maybe some flashier runs. But just in terms of how hard and physical they ran, I thought that was their best game on Saturday. And across the board, all of those guys, you know, right up until the, you know, the backups were in at the end of the game. I mean, to a man, they were much more physical than the second and third level guys that were trying to tackle them all game long. So credit to those guys for a great game.
All right. I do want to touch on here real quick, the offensive line. Number one, Derek, we've talked a lot already about the improvement that we've seen, particularly from Slam Schluter. But I want to get your opinion. I think right now that left side, you know, it is probably the better of the two sides, right or left. And maybe you can touch a little bit on, you know, the success that they're having, especially with outside zone.
Yeah, so I think what's going on now is we talked before we started recording tonight about the schemes that defenses are having. You have to make a choice coming into the game, how they're going to scheme Minnesota, what they're going to try and take away. And for the last two or three games, and specific to Saturday, Maryland made the choice that they were going to try and take away the deep to intermediate passing game. So they didn't want to give up anything behind them. They were playing very deep. They kept two safeties back. And of course, the trade-off is that they were running even boxes for most of the game. So what does Minnesota do? Obviously, they want to run into even boxes, particularly outside zone, because they can outrun the backside of the defense, and they had a lot of success doing that. So if Maryland's going to run even boxes, they have to determine with their front seven how they're going to try to stop the run with an even box. And early in the year, the answer to that would have been stunting and slanting from the defensive line. So the beginning of this game, that's exactly what Maryland tried to do. Well, the Gophers, probably the single biggest improvement they've made on the offensive line is handling those slants and stunts. Early in the year, that gave them a lot of trouble, and it was slowed them down quite a bit. And what's happening now is when they see that, if they're able to pick up those slants and stunts, it leads to bigger gains. That's why defenses don't normally do that a lot, because you leave yourself susceptible to a big gain. So early in the game, that's what Minnesota did. They picked up a lot of bigger gains in the running game. For Maryland, as the game went on, they stopped slanting and stunting. And then what happens is you become passive. And Minnesota was more physical, I thought, on the front seven than Maryland was on the defensive front seven. And they ended up pushing the line, being more physical. And then when Maryland went plus one in the box, they went back to inside zone and they optioned that defensive end. So I think those things, you know, contributed to their success in the running game and on the offensive line. And that addition of having outside zone has been just a game changer this year, because it just forces the defense and specifically the linebackers to defend another phase of the offense. And so it's that's what's presented a matchup problem for the defenses, and that's what you saw on Saturday.
And that's where you mentioned it, and I can't take credit for it, Derek, is this offense is three different things right now. They are inside zone, they are outside zone, and they're RPO. No team has been able to take away all three of those things. And maybe that's going to happen next month. You're facing some pretty good defenses. And Wisconsin, Iowa, and Penn State, and Pat Fitzgerald, for as anemic as that offense is, their defense is still pretty good. You're going to be going against four of the better defenses in the Big Ten. But the way that this offense is humming right now with all three of those things, it's impressive for my money anyway. And I wrote about this on GI today. The outside zone running is, for me, the MVP of this Gopher offense right now. That third option. And we're talking about an outside zone running scheme that was not there in 2018. Hell, it wasn't even there in the non-conference. Schrock is the one that brought it up to me when I asked him about it earlier this year that, yeah, we were bad at it. Like, we were really bad. Like, we had the most negative plays on outside zone in the country in the non-conference. What a difference that bye week made, and the way that Minnesota can now effectively and efficiently run outside zone right now. It really is like a light bulb just switched on, and now all the offensive line, I'm like, oh, I just have to run outside zone? Okay. Because I swear Minnesota's getting 7 to 10 yards a clip against Big Ten teams. And I just, you know, I asked somebody about it, someone close to the staff, someone close to offensive line coach Brian Callahan and his thinking. And I know that we'd asked Schrock about it, but really the message that was resonated back to me was Minnesota has spent a lot of time behind the scenes with the outside zone play. They've spent a lot of time researching it. They've been very patient with it in practice. They've really tried to get a lot of reps there. And they knew it was just a matter of time until it clicked. Well, it has certainly clicked here in the month of October. And it's really that simple. That was what got back to me. And I'm like, well, I wish there was a magic answer for everybody who's asking me, because I know I get that question a lot, is what's clicked? It's just the guys getting enough repetitions now and they feel comfortable with it. I also think that going back to the offensive line, Derek, that I thought Blaze Andrews had a little bit of a rush start, but overall, I think he had his best game to date. He was moving people. He was getting to the second level. He was being athletic in space, and he was putting people on their backs. Now, this entire moving company up front, I think, had another great game. You saw the angry ginger at his co-keef return to the starting lineup, and he is as devastating of a tight end run blocker right now as Colton Beebe was, and that is high, high praise, because Colton Beebe was a mauler last year for Minnesota at the tight end position. And then without Jake Paulson again this week, which that was a surprise one to me, but I guess Minnesota really wants to make sure that shoulder is okay coming out of the bye. I thought Brevin Spanford played with as much physicality at tight end as I've seen. And that really leads me into the Wildcat, Derek, where we had not seen the Wildcat really the entire year. We'd seen it a little bit here and then. It didn't have a lot of success. And then you look at Seth Green gets 6 carries on the day out of the Wildcat for 2 touchdowns and I believe 2 fourth down conversions. So seemingly every time Minnesota went into their Wildcat, it was a high leverage spot. And there were some gigantic holes for him to run through. Now, I think that's on the tackles and the tight ends. But what do you think Shiraka saw on tape that he was like, we need to go to the Wildcat? And not only did he see that on tape, this offense went out and executed that so brilliantly.
I think Maryland, the way that they match up with their defense, I do think they have a fair amount of team speed on defense, but I don't know that they're heavy or stout against, you know, straight ahead running, particularly short yardage. So I think that what the Gopher offensive staff looked at was, you know, hey, if we get into short yardage situations, we're going to stack as many blockers as we can going head up to try to run straight at them. And the best way to do that, obviously, is going with Wildcat, which gets you an additional blocker. As you mentioned, Mo Ibrahim being that guy, basically acting as a fullback. And then if you're motioning in that wide receiver, in this case, Brevin Spanford, I thought it was his best blocking game. I agree with you. I thought it was his best blocking game of the year. Definitely the most physical he's been, and I think the most clean he was with his block. So he had all those things, and Gophers, and many of those short yardage, again, Maryland pinched or slanted the D-line, and Gophers were able to wash that down. You know, and in one case, basically ended up walking into the end zone because they were able to wash down the defenders. So they continue. It's just been an interesting study to look at how they've continued to add wrinkles to that Wildcat as the year has gone on. They started off with running, you know, they ran a couple direct snaps to the running back to try and become a little bit less predictable. They've now added an extra offensive lineman in some cases. They've now started also splitting out Brevin Spanford. I would not doubt if in the next, at least sometime in the next 4 games, if they see the right look to see Seth Green throw a 50-50 ball or a fade or a back shoulder to Brevin Spanford out of that formation, if they see the right look. So I think they're just going to continue to add wrinkles because obviously trying to be unpredictable, you know, in those situations. It's going to keep the defense on their heels, and that's what they want.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the passing game. We probably need to touch on Tanner Morgan's day. 12 for 21, 138 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. I'm actually 100% okay with that interception. We talked for years on this podcast that sometimes you just got to take a deep shot. Flex said in the halftime interview with Justin Gard that you know, he was fine. He said that was the right play call, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They just need to make the tackle in that situation. Again, I'm fine with that. You know, Tanner probably didn't have his sharpest day. Obviously, you can't replicate the Purdue game every single game. But, you know, he was elusive with his feet. You know, five carries for 30 yards. But again, he maybe wasn't as sharp as he's been. But at the end of the day, it didn't make a difference. There's definitely room for him to improve, and he'd be the first one to say that. So, Derek, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Tanner and kind of, you know, especially what we saw from him on Saturday. Obviously, room to improve there. But, you know, enough to keep the balance between run pass and then the run pass option, obviously.
Yeah, I think that in the passing game, you know, with evaluating the quarterback, I typically break it down into two different, you know, your pre and post snap reads, the mental part of the game, the progressions and things, and then the second part being the accuracy, hitting your spots, making those good throws. And I think the second portion, hitting your spots and making the clean throws, I think was an up and down game for him, frankly. Missed on a few throws. Just wasn't tight with some of his throws. Other times looked okay. I did think he had a very good game on the first portion. So reading defenses, making your pre and post snap reads. A couple of good examples that come to mind. I mean, the first two passing touchdowns were both good mental plays for Tanner Morgan. First one, Maryland shows a cover zero blitz. So he's got to get the right protection called, and there's going to be a free rusher, and he's got to get the ball out quick. So he makes the right protection call. He knows that Rashad Bateman is going to be in one-on-one coverage because it's cover zero. He ends up throwing a back shoulder. It becomes basically a box-out play for Bateman. And then later on in the game, Tyler Johnson's touchdown, I believe in maybe the same quarter. Once again, Maryland shows a cover zero blitz. You can tell that the coaching staff had the offense, and particularly Tanner Morgan, ready for this because he changes the protection. He moves Shannon Brooks over to the right side. He slides the protection to his blind side. They bring the free rusher off of his face so he knows it's coming and he has to get through the ball quick. Tyler Johnson, you know, puts an insane slant move on the cover zero man coverage slot receiver there and ends up catching it and walking into the end zone. So I think a good sharp game for him mentally, and, you know, just not 100% clean on some of his passes, but as you said, overall, definitely enough to, you know, get it done and get enough out of him and for that game and you know, able to contribute and basically ride out the running game, to be honest. The last thing I'll say is, if you notice, he did change up his technique slightly on zone read when Maryland went plus one in the box. They ended up optioning off the defensive end. And if you notice, he was riding the running back longer. This did a couple things. One, it forced that defensive end to have to make a decision whether they're going to take the running back or take the quarterback. And it also gives a little bit longer time for those blockers to get downfield and get to the linebacker level. So it was nice to see that wrinkle also put in and was well executed by Tanner.
I don't know that I have much more to add for Derek on Tanner because you stole a lot of what I was going to touch on. But I'll also say that while it wasn't clean for some throws and everything, I will echo once again that especially on that slant to Tyler Johnson, that was Tanner adjusting. Like Derek said, Minnesota was in a different play call. The audibles, he sees that there's, I believe it was seven, eight guys coming. He moves Shannon Brooks to the side that he knew that they were going to bring pressure from, slides the offensive line protection, sees that Tyler Johnson has one-on-one coverage in the slot, and he knows that Tyler Johnson, more times than not, is going to be able to beat a slot corner on a slant. Now, the funny part about it to me is watching that back, that slot corner is playing with inside leverage. And what does that mean? That means he's playing on Tyler's inside shoulder or inside foot, essentially saying, I'm not going to let you beat me on the slant. What does Tyler do? He puts him in concrete boots and just burns him on this slant. The corner falls over. Tyler makes a great catch at the touchdown. Now, the only thing I will add to what Derek said is I want to talk about the sacks. And now you may be thinking to yourself, Ryan, there were no sacks on Saturday. And that's the point, is this was an offensive line that was struggling at times to protect their quarterback. Plus, I didn't think Tanner Morgan was moving around the pocket very effectively in September, that is. Well, boy, did they change their best in October, because in October, Minnesota allowed one sack in four Big Ten games. One sack. They were bottom five in college football through their first five games in sack rate. And I know that was a stat that was brought up to me. And I think that you can't, I think it's essentially 50-50 on the offensive line and on the quarterback. Because the offensive line, yeah, they can, there's some pressures that get that will get through, or a guy gets beat around the edge, sure. But if the quarterback holds the ball too long, or if he's just not very effective in the pocket and moving around and understanding where the escape lanes are, that's tough. Now, Tanner, I think, had one of his better games in terms of moving around the pocket. He had a beautiful pirouette and he scrambled for a first down on it. I mean, you'd like to see him slide there, but one sack in the month of October was allowed by this Gopher offense. And I think that's a credit to the offensive line first and foremost, but you also have to give Tanner Morgan credit for the way that he moved around the pocket on Saturday. Now, the final thing I'll say on this offense is they're doing exactly what PJ Fleck wants them to do. Now, of course, that sounds really easy, but we, as the media, asked PJ, what's the first thing you look at when you get that stat sheet after the game? And he said time of possession. And so, of course, we asked back, why time of possession? And Fleck answered with, the way that they play football on offense, they really want to be dominating in time of possession. Well, Minnesota is now number two, I believe, in the Big Ten in time of possession. Okay? They have, and they're also very, very efficient. And what do I mean by that? Well, they had seven trips into the red zone on Saturday, and they scored points on all seven of those. Now, if my stats are correct, Minnesota is number three in the entire country in red zone touchdowns. That's pretty good. So if you can dominate time of possession, of which Minnesota wants to do in their offense, and then as you're dominating time of possession, that probably means you're moving the ball into the red zone, and you need to be efficient in the red zone. Minnesota's doing that. They're getting touchdowns instead of threes, and that's how you see them outscore their opponents by 127 points in the month of October. And they averaged 42 points per game against four Big Ten teams in the month of October. I don't know that there's much else to say about this offense, Luke, so why don't we kick it to you for our final ad read with the Goal Line Club.
All right, so with the Goal Line Club, I just want to let people know that, you know, this, the end of the season is coming. There are only so many events that they have left in season. So I want to encourage you to check out both the tailgate and the preview events. I do want to make a note that at the Penn State preview event, there will be a Jack's Cafe. You can use the promo code BELL5 to save $5. Also, Bobby Bell will be there. So if you are interested in hearing him speak, that should be very interesting. I don't know who the coach is going to be yet, but also there will be a preview event for the Wisconsin game. It will be on Black Friday. Both of these I expect will sell out. So if you are interested, please sign up now. I'll actually pull the promo code for the Wisconsin game. That is AXED5. AXED5. And again, the tailgates also are going to be very, very, very close to selling out. I'm actually expecting both of them to sell out. So if you are going to attend those, make sure that you sign up soon. I already know that they have large numbers of signups. The tailgates in particular are great this time of year because of the fact that they are indoors. And I think the one thing that has really resonated with a lot of people is the indoor bathrooms, Ryan.
Yeah, being able to get out of the weather conditions, especially with November just around the corner here. I know that on Monday here, it's going to be in the 30s. And now November is going to be here very, very shortly. And that means 30s and 20s. And that's Big Ten football. And for those of you who want to come support this undefeated team, and you don't want to deal with the hassle of setting up, taking down in the cold, and kind of just, if you being out in the cold that far ahead is going to just not have great effects on you at the game, the goal line club is inside. It is unlimited beverages. It's unlimited food. And you get to be inside with indoor bathrooms, as Luke said. So if you want to learn more, go to goalineclub.org, because as Luke and I mentioned, I would be shocked if that Penn State game didn't sell out, and then especially Wisconsin as well. It's going to be popping in there, so you might as well get ahead of it. But I do want to touch on two more things before we get big picture here. One is the bane of my existence, and that continues to be Gopher special teams. Now, Luke, I do want to ask you about the special teams, because your guy, Jacob Herbers, only punts once on the day, and he shanks at 29 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So he is now Minnesota, I should say. Minnesota's punt coverage unit is third worst in the Big Ten. They're averaging 36 net yards per punt. When you talk about special teams, you want to be able to flip the field. That has not been Jacob Herbers. Now, Minnesota has also punted less than any other Big Ten team in Big Ten play. So when you do send your punter out there, you'd like to be able to see him flip the field. You also had Demetrius Douglas muff a punt. You also saw the kickoff coverage allow 27 yards per return, including a 41-yarder to set Maryland up with great field position. So, Luke, I will ask you this. What do I have to do to get Rob Wenger's special teams to play better? I talk about them each week on this podcast. I talk about them each week on Gopher Illustrated. But as I continue to say and as I continue to write, if this Gopher special teams unit continues to touch the damn stove each week, they are going to get burned.
I mean, I think what you have to do is hope and pray.
So I got to turn to religion is what you're telling me.
Well, it feels like that at this point. You know, at the end of the day, you know, special teams, you know, are somewhat looked down upon. But like you said, they play an integral role in the game of football, especially kicking, right? Whether it's kickoff or field goals or punts, they do play a crucial role. I think, you know, one thing is college punters are not notoriously very good or very consistent, right? And we were very fortunate for a long time with Pete Mortel, the fact that he was actually very consistent, actually very good. You know, since then, it's been a bit of a consistency struggle punting. In large part, that's due to the kick and less about the coverage. And I think that's part of what you're getting at with the poor stats that you were citing.
Yeah, because I haven't thought that the coverage has been the issue. I have not thought that. It's been the punt.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, I think that Herbers, he kind of is what he is, right? He has some games where he is lights out and he is a special team player of the week, and then he has weeks like this week where, you know, only a tiny sample size, but only one punt, only 29 yards, and you know, in games in November, especially when you have teams that, you know, it's cold and you're going to be looking to have long sustained drives, etc., flipping the field is crucial, and we are going to need those guys to change their best going forward. I don't know if we're going to be able to see it though, given the very large sample size we've had thus far.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. And then Derek, I want to ask you about flex timeouts. Because that was wild on Saturday. He burns all three timeouts in the first quarter, and then he burns all three of his second half timeouts in the third quarter. If there's one knock on Fleck, it is certainly the way he is very liberal about using his timeouts. He is not going to take them with him at the end of the game. Now, I think that's going to hopefully change in Big Ten or in these final four games, because in my opinion, they're going to be much more highly contested, and that makes each one of these timeouts so much more valuable. But what did you think of the way he was burning through timeouts like they were going out of sale?
Well, I might be in the minority on this, but I don't have a problem, especially in the first half, calling some timeouts in key situations on offense when, well, things like the red zone, I think, was the first one. When you're in third and five, for example, and you're getting down there, and if you don't call a timeout, you're going to have a delay of game. you're going to be better, a lot better off in a third and five than a third and 10. And that could be, you know, early in the game, you don't know the final score is going to be 52-10. And so converting that third down might be a huge play in the game, might end up being a huge play in the game. So I'm of the opinion in the first half, I don't mind it so much. They haven't been in a situation too much where at the end of the half, they're having to, you know, mount a drive. In this game in particular, they knew they were going to receive the second half kick. So I don't have as much problem in the first half. Now, the second half, I wonder, I guess I'm defending him because I wonder how that might have been different if the score had been different. I do think what you're saying is that you do want to keep one or two of those if you can in a tighter game in the second half, because obviously if you get the ball back and you have to mount a drive and you're down by a score or less, you want to be able to use those timeouts to your advantage or be able to, you know, stop them from running the clock out. So it's a fair point, but if I look, you know, at where the situations he's using those timeouts in, maybe I'm on my own on this, but I don't have as much of a problem with it, to be honest.
So I want to jump in on this real quick. When it comes to those timeouts, what I was trying to figure out, and I tried to watch this closely when I did the rewatch since I wasn't able to watch it live, this seems to be a trend so far this year, and even with this offensive staff while they've been here, they struggle sometimes to get play calls in, and I know that a lot of that is that, you know, Tanner Morgan or whoever the quarterback is looks over the sideline, you know, as they may audible, etc., based on the look that they're given. So Derek, I'm curious, you know, it's been kind of slow, and Kill was similar to this, where they would burn timeouts because they couldn't quite get comfortable, you know, similar to like somebody standing over a putt. It just takes them a long time to get comfortable, and it's like they can't get comfortable within the window of the play clock. I'm curious if that is what you're seeing as well, and it's really maybe some of the coaches, you know, outside of Fleck need to change their best.
Well, I think that could be. I think what's happening with the RPO system they use, even on, you know, many plays, no matter what the game situation is, they're snapping the ball with under 5 seconds on the play clock. And the reason for that is they want to let the defense set up, even if the defense is going to shadow something or stem into a different formation. They want to give time for that to happen. And so basically they're trying to wait for the defense to show their hand, and then they make the play call. And so back to my original example, if it's third and five, you have the personnel you have. If you have a play call and the defense isn't giving you the look you want, and those coaches might know before the play happens that the rate of success for what we have called is extremely low. And so we need to take a timeout because we feel like this play is going to get stopped and we're going to end up, you know, not getting the first down, whether that means punting or kicking the field goal. So I think that factors into it, but maybe what you're asking about, Luke, specifically is if the coaches on the sidelines, if they're getting the right guys in there, if they're getting lined up. I haven't seen that. I guess I haven't seen that be too much of a problem in terms of guys getting lined up or getting the personnel in there, because again, many of those things, they're taking their time because they know that they're not going to snap the ball anyway until you get down to the last 10 seconds. I don't know, Ryan or Lucas, if you guys have seen the same, but that would be my take.
Well, I can admit when I'm wrong. I've already done that once. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's fine. Let's actually jump and talk big picture. So, you know, here we are going into a bye week. We're looking at November, and it's going to be meaningful November football. Obviously, being 8-0 is a big part of that, but also some really big games coming up. Penn State, in particular, looms large on the horizon. You know, one, maybe let's start here. What do you see from a record perspective the Gophers have to go to look at this season as a success sitting here 8-0 right now? Maybe Derek will start with you.
Well, I think that 2-2 would be a success. I mean, ending up 10-2 would definitely be a success. You know, they've set themselves up extremely well. Everybody knows, however, that the last part of the schedule is going to be the, at least on paper, the toughest part of the schedule. So I would say 2-2. That would be my vote. Or 2-2 or better, obviously.
I think I'd say 2-2 as well. And I would be frankly disappointed if they don't get the West with a 2-game lead with 4 games left. Now you have to play Wisconsin and Iowa, who are going to be the 2 other teams competing. But so Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Penn State are all on byes this upcoming weekend. So each of them gets a week off, and then Iowa and Wisconsin play each other off a bye the same weekend that Minnesota plays Penn State. And essentially the loser of Iowa-Wisconsin is eliminated, unless Minnesota goes 0-3 into Wisconsin, which, I mean, crazier things have happened. But the way that Minnesota's playing football right now, I can't see that being a legitimate scenario. So one scenario would be that I suppose Minnesota loses to Penn State, beats Iowa, beats Northwestern. And if that's the case, it comes down to, does Iowa beat Wisconsin next weekend? Because like I said, essentially the loser of Iowa heading to Camp Randall is eliminated, unless Minnesota just really doesn't play well down the stretch, which, like I said, crazier things are happening. Now, I think to me, the most likely scenario is Minnesota goes, I believe if Wisconsin wins next weekend against Iowa. So Wisconsin's final 4 games are Iowa, Nebraska, and Purdue before Minnesota. Minnesota's 3-game stretch before they take on the Badgers is Penn State, Iowa, and Northwestern. And then Iowa in that same final 3-game stretch is Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois. Now, say what you will about Illinois, but they're playing hot right now. So I just think that you're 8-0. You know, first time since 41. You've won 5 straight, your first 5 Big Ten games since 61. You've already done so many different things record-wise that you're undefeated. You have the biggest home game in TCF Bank Stadium history next weekend. For my money, the biggest home game since 2003 when Minnesota blew that big lead against Michigan at home. You already got a 2-game lead in the Big Ten West. You might as well just go out and win the damn thing and then go get absolutely slobber knocked by Ohio State. But I would be frankly disappointed in anything less than a Big Ten West title. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to say, 2-2 is reasonable, but I would be disappointed if they don't win the West at this point. It's positioned for them. It's even possibly likely, that they go into that Wisconsin game and they've maybe already even won the West, right? If things work out the way, on paper that you'd kind of hope, but I'm not saying that will happen, but I think that if, they didn't win the West, I wouldn't call the season a failure. I think that I would be slightly disappointed, and I think that fans would be slightly disappointed. But I mean, all in all, I never in my wildest dreams thought they'd be ranked 13th in the country, right? Not to mention the computers like us, guys. The S&P has them ranked 12th. So, I mean, like, I just didn't.
Minnesota hasn't played anyone.
But yeah, I know, I know, and you know what? They're ninth, being ranked ninth offensively. That also has to do because they didn't play anyone. Because they don't play real teams; they play fake teams.
But I just think that reevaluating expectations is a part of what we have to do. I suppose is yeah, they're 8-0. I mean, for me, I think the season's already a success,
yes.
But I think it could be something like we haven't seen in a long, long time if this team just goes 2-2 down the stretch. And it starts with Penn State next weekend, which I think we should just leave off with is, like I mentioned, it's going to be the biggest game in TCF Bank Stadium history. It's the biggest home game in 16 years. Now, here's my question is, if this game isn't sold out, there is just, you're never going to sell out a game. You're just not. And can you give me a plausible reason, Luke, on outside of it being negative 90 out, that this game would not be sold out?
There's no plausible reason that it shouldn't be sold out. I hate to say this, it wouldn't surprise me if it doesn't, though. I have texted back and forth with a number of people on this topic this evening because Derek Burns asked me a question via text about, you know, just the market in general. And I question the college football interest in this Twin City market. I don't know why. Derek brought that up to me too. I don't know, Derek, if you want to talk about that more, but this market struggles with college football.
Yeah, I think my take, and what I would encourage anybody to do, you know, I'd love for people to come out and see Gopher football because, you know, the share and the passion, et cetera. But I think maybe I think when you have this conversation, it immediately goes to finger pointing and people saying, well, they should have done this or this group, or they go to ticket prices or this or that. And I guess if there's one thing I could speak to, it's I think this market has missed out on the college football, a big portion of this market has missed out on the college football experience. Now, part of that is the fact that the team has not had a lot of success or as much success as people would like over the last 50 years. There's other factors in there as well, but I would encourage anybody to go out and see a game in the Big Ten at Penn State or at Ohio State or really anywhere, to be honest. But there's a college football experience that cannot be replicated, and I think we've missed out on that to a large degree, and part of it is because the lack of big games like Penn State. And so I don't think people are aware of what they're missing, maybe is a better way to say it. And I think that contributes to it. And so that's going to take time to change that. And the only thing I'll say is that, you know, the longer people wait, the more they're just going to miss out, because it's a unique experience. It's, in my opinion, the best game day experience of any sport, pro, amateur, anything else. I'm biased, of course, but I think that that's been missing. And I think that that's a major draw for college football. And when you take that out, maybe some of that is understandable.
I get that Minnesota's been mediocre for like 60, 70 years outside of a few spiked years, but they're not this year. They're pretty good. And this is a huge home game that I know Fleck and this team want to have home field advantage for. And that's where, you know, you also could say, you know, college game day coming to town would certainly bring a lot of excitement. And I don't disagree. And you saw Fleck lobby for it after the game. Guys, they're not going to get game day over number one LSU versus number two Alabama, or vice versa there.
Yeah.
I just don't see it happening. I think they got a better shot when Wisconsin comes to town, but I mean, this is a huge game, and Penn State's a pretty dang good team. They're also undefeated. So you got 2-8-0 teams coming together on November 9th. I just know that this is exactly what we wanted. And by we, Luke and I, coming into this season, is a meaningful November.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got a two-game lead in the Big Ten West, and now it's time to go show the rest of the country and the rest of the Big Ten what you're about.
Let me just jump in real quick. I want to add one other thing. I thought Derek did a really good job, and I think the one thing that we overlook, I think the lazy take is that there's, you know, lots of pro sports, and you know you can only spend your money, you know, so many places. While that's true, I think that's an easy and maybe a little lazy take. I think that there's also a finger to be pointed at TV and how good TV is right now. And guess what? The Big Ten Network has a part in that. And I think that people have gotten spoiled by the fact that they don't have to leave, and people are lazy. Like, I'll admit it. I'm one of those people that I much prefer to watch a number of games on television. I do love to experience them as well, but I really love the TV coverage. And if you're going to experience college football, you need to experience the whole thing. It's the tailgating, going to the game, everything. It is not just the game. It is so much more than just the game. And TV doesn't give you that, but I love the TV part as well. And I think that that plays a major, major role in this market and every market, not just this market, every market. And I think that's part of why when we talk to Eric Vigo, winning isn't going to cure everything. It just isn't. And until you have sustained success, I'm still not convinced that they're going to sell out game in and game out just because of how good television is in this day and age.
Can I ask a question about game day? Sorry that we're jumping around, but just Ryan brought up a good point. This isn't a rhetorical question. I don't know the answer. Do you guys think that part of the strategy with Coach Fleck bringing up and lobbying or advocating for game day was just to create that conversation? So knowing that there's a small chance that game day comes here, and maybe even he himself, of course, if they get it, great, but maybe he doesn't even believe that there's a good chance, but that he's bringing it up so that Minnesota is a part of the game day conversation on a national scale, and just getting people to talk about Minnesota potentially getting game day is a win from an exposure standpoint.
Absolutely. 400%. Yeah.
Just even look at the conversations that you're seeing on Twitter right now, right?
Like, look at the discussion we're even having.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And this is, I don't know if we attribute a lot of the brilliance from a marketing perspective solely to him. I'm sure there are other people in that football department, but dude, he gets it. And that's why Mark Coyle picked him, because he is marketable and he markets, and Mark Coyle's a marketing guy. I don't know what else we have to talk about. Any other big picture stuff, guys? Otherwise, we'll give people their time back. For all you people that are still sitting in your car waiting to go into work or the gym, kudos to you. You made it about an hour and 15 minutes. Anything else, guys?
I don't think so. Derek, I don't believe you're going to be with us for the Penn State breakdown, right?
I unfortunately will not be. I will be back for, is it Iowa after Penn State game? Yes, I will not be with you for Penn State, unfortunately.
If you are the only one groaning in your car or at your house or at the gym, if you think you're the only one, you're not. So we're going to miss him for that. But Luke and I will have something out here during the bye week for a podcast, but then we're going to switch to Penn State week and a very meaningful November.
And we're,
it's going to be an exciting ride ahead of us.
We'll also release the Penn State preview early, given, you know, the lead up time to it, etc. I think the plan is to release it early. I guess maybe Ryan can twist my arm if he decides he'd rather not, but I think it'll be early. So again, for everybody that's listened, thank you, number one, for listening. It's been a lot of fun. If you're new to the podcast, thank you for listening. You can actually rate and review our podcast on like Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever you're listening to this. Some aggregators don't do that, but if you could rate and review, that helps us a lot in terms of other people finding us, etc. We want to again thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club and Insurance by Burns. We appreciate them supporting the effort of what we do here. And again, we want to thank you for listening. It's so fun to make these, and go Gophers.